I said, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me. To carry on. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Wetlala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shwaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia. Many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning into KBOO Portland.
What makes you such a threat? We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Uchasha, akan tu uchasha. Oe to na kichama khaki la akan ompi. O ahu to pa na khupa hu yukhami. Taka uskan skan ompi kile na yuha. Ma khaki la akan tchan ka taka mo echa ki ena ke he om. O na ha oho ki chila mani pikte. Ma khaki la oho ki la mina moshi kila. He om heche. Le om yuita.
Tatangi ma.
Away, away. Aloha kākou e komo mai. Heartfelt greetings and welcome. I shake your hand with good feelings in my heart, and the whole world is a beautiful day. You're listening to First Voices Radio, coming to you this week from Hawaii Nei, or the illegally occupied Hawaiian Kingdom, as we Kanaka Oiwi call it, but known to most people as Hawaii. I'm Ann Kaila Kelly, sitting in for your host, Teoxin Ghost Horse. And on his behalf, I thank you for your generosity, as always, and for being here, because without you, this show cannot go on. This is all Native hosted, all Native produced, First Voices Radio, now in its 28th year of broadcasting. Our First Voices Radio producer is the magnificent Liz Hill. I want to welcome the nearly 100 community public and commercial radio stations that carry First Voices Radio, and thank all of you who monitor this program online and around our mother, the Earth. Now, as Teokasin would say, let's count coup. Our guest for the entire hour is singer, songwriter, all-around Indigenous artist, educator, and advocate, Buffy St. Marie, with a few cardinal birds and roosters chiming in the background. It would take half the length of this show, at least, to list her contributions and awards, so I'll just mention a few. In addition to more than a dozen honorary doctorates in music, the humanities, letters, and law, Buffy St. Marie was inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame and is the first Indigenous person to receive an Academy Award. But for First Nations peoples, she holds a special place in our hearts, not only because of her accomplishments, but because of who she is and what she's endured. Her career spans more than 50 years, and although her peers include Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, and many other big names from the 60s, Buffy was singled out and blacklisted during the administrations of Presidents Johnson and Nixon. And as you can imagine, that severely impacted her career in the United States. Yet despite that, she has recorded 21 albums so far and continued on as a performer. And she still stands strong for Indigenous peoples, for all peoples, for justice, Mother Earth, and for animals. Her songs are about love, war, poverty, being Indigenous, and living as your true, authentic self. And she's never stopped doing all of that with the urgency and power of a poet who has the courage and will of a warrior. Her songs have been recorded by Barbara Streisand, Celine Dion, Cher, and too many people to name here. So before we get to the interview, I'm going to play a medley of what a few others have done with some of her songs.
We're going to do a song by Buffy St. Marie. Indian legislation's on the desk of a Durack congressman. He don't know much about the issues, so he picks up the phone. Asks the advice of the senator out in Indian country, a darling of the energy companies, ripping off what's left of the reservation. I learned a safety rule, I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They're sending federal tanks. It is nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart in wounded.
The sweetest love I ever had, I left aside because I did not want to be any man's bride.
You're not a dream, you're not an angel, you're a woman.
I'm not a king, I'm a man, take my hand.
We'll make a space in the life that we plan.
And you will stay until it's time for you to go.
He's 5 foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears.
He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him. This is not the way we put an end to war.
Buffy St. Marie, aloha and welcome to First Voices Radio.
Good morning. Aloha.
Before we get started, I want to mention to listeners that June 6th, Canada celebrated you as part of that country's National Indigenous History Month. You've been decorated, celebrated, awarded many times over for your contributions, not only in entertainment, but I would say equally for your work as an activist and educator. So, Buffy, it's my honor to spend some time with you talking about your life and works.
Thanks. Thanks, Kayla. Thank you. I don't think they were celebrating me, by the way. Everybody was celebrating. We were saying that June is, in Canada, is National Indigenous History Month. But I've been participating in a lot of things that would support that, but no, it's not about me.
Well, I think the article that I saw is, I think they're kind of choosing somebody each day.
Oh, is that right? I'll have to look. Well,
that's
thanks.
What it looks like thanks. They're doing. Uh-huh.
Am I a monument?
I didn't say anything about any monuments or anything, but they did have a lovely photo of you in the article.
Ah, there you go.
You've been a part of a lot of benefits recently, particularly with regard to the coronavirus pandemic and raising money for food banks in Canada and a few other things. But right now, we're all in the throes of grief and mourning and just righteous protest in the wake of George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis by police officers. So I want to know what your thoughts are and feelings are about what's happening, not just in the U.S., but all over the world right now.
Well, of course, my first feeling, like you, is just, you know, just amazement and collective grief, and yet, as both an Indigenous person and a musician who's gotten to, you know, just kind of see the world, like many other people who've traveled a lot and who've traveled across their own cultural so-called borders. You know, people who've traveled beyond the community they grew up in, people who've traveled a lot. You know, we've seen this coming for so long. And even before the virus, I had lost two loved ones one who died at age 50 because of not the virus, but just diseases that have been around for so long among, you know, just poverty diseases. He died of diabetes and just malnutrition and, you know, just all of the things that have been in the world of indigenous people for centuries. You know, many, many, many groups of indigenous people have never really recovered from, you know, the last 500 years. So for me, there's a sense of this is a time that when indigenous people ourselves are isolating and, you know, we have a lot of us have time on our hands for once instead of being just pursued by or pursuing the almighty dollar and the calendar and clock that go with them. You know, we have time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my time anyway, I'm a bibliopholic. I enjoy education. I love learning. I feel like somebody's giving out free dollar bills whenever I learn something. And, you know, I'm a big fan of history and just learning about indigenous people. And sometimes when you hear the word history, we think of, oh, history, the history of Indians, it's all about the white man's wars. But you know, there's an awful lot more to learn that was going on before, beside, and after what we think of as the white man's wars. And poverty and malnutrition have been with us for a very long time. So the coronavirus, in a way, it makes every, you know, it's as though somebody's kicked over the whole entire anthill. And there's almost no time to figure out who did what when there's such an emergency. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like we have this incredible buildup of things from all over the planet, you know, things that have been wrong for a long time. So alongside just the emergency of trying to save lives, I'm thinking about the long time ongoing emergency of marginalization, of poverty, of colonialism, how it's left our people even more unprepared than the average person sitting on their couch in an apartment, you know. These mm-hmm. are people who, they could be growing their own food except the land was taken away or polluted or condemned or otherwise stolen.
Remember the times that you have held your head high and told all your friends of your Indian claim. Proud good lady and proud good man, your great-great-grandfather from Indian blood sprang, and you feel in your heart for these ones. Oh, it's written in books and in songs that we've been mistreated and wronged. Well, over and over I hear the same words from you, good lady, and you, good man. Well, listen to me if you care where we stand and you feel you're a part of these ones. When a about Uncle Sam, or are you still taking our lands? A treaty forever George Washington signed. He did, dear lady, he did, dear man. And the treaty's being broken by Kim's or Dam. And what will you do for these ones? Oh, it's all in the past, you can say, but it's still going on here today. The government now wants the Iroquois land, that of the Seneca and the Cheyenne. It's here and
you know, we have our own ways of health, of mental health supports that, you know, most of us don't even talk about them. We don't even talk about the alternatives that exist or and that existed.
Yeah, the traditions, really.
Exactly. And some and when we think about traditions, a non-Indigenous person hearing us for the first time might think traditions, oh, that means they wear feather bonnets and, you know, their style of music and dance. They think of that as tradition, which is fine. But our traditions of science and health and medicine, I mean, most people are unaware that Indigenous people on this side of the water invented things like the rubber bulb syringe, cranial surgery, mathematics, which has only recently been caught up to by computers, scientific inventions, medicines, achievements in science and astronomy.
Sports. You were talking about this in the clip I saw about the National Indigenous History Month. They had a clip of you talking about sports.
I did, yeah. That was when, you know, I'm kind of strategic sometimes because I've been doing this for so long, I get a lot of rabbits to pull out of my hats. And some of those rabbits, came about, you know, in my childhood or in the 60s or something. Mm-hmm. And those rabbits are still in there. And one of the rabbits is just taking a good look at something without bias and trying to enjoy learning. For National Indigenous History Month, I was trying to fire people up about, you know, whether you're Indigenous or not, did you know that team sports were invented on this side of the water? That team sports were invented in the Americas and were played throughout the Americas long before 1492, and that even in the Olympics, the Greeks nobody had invented team sports. They were all individual sports, which is also wonderful. But I think it's interesting when you have kids trying to comply with everybody's suggestion, oh, be proud you're an Indian, right? I mean, mm-hmm. How many times have you heard that? Mm-hmm. And how many times has there been nothing attached to it of which we're supposed to be proud? I mean, nobody tells kids about our achievements in anything, in science, in agriculture, and even in sports. But just think, every now and then you have the Major League Baseball, you've got hockey season, you've got football season and basketball season. And how about we let little Indigenous kids know that, did you know that we invented the rubber ball? Did you know that we invented rubber? Charles Goodyear did not. No, he did not. No. Vulcanized rubber was, he rediscovered it and patented it. That's all he did. Did you know that we invented the football stadium with bleachers on either side and goalposts at either end, that we invented things like protective equipment for the ball games? They were all based on the original Mayan ball games. You know, goals and protective equipment, knee pads, shoulder pads, hip pads, helmets with animal logos on them. I mean, that's the NFL. And nobody tells little Indian kids that, you know. First Nations kids are just told, be proud you're an Indian, and be proud of what? That you were poor? That even though there are a lot of wonderful Indigenous musicians, we don't really have a music industry. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of people in the white music industry, the black music industry, the Latino industry. We don't have that yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to do with this time is encourage people to to find a way to enjoy learning. Because it's not all that dull crap they tried to force down our throats in school. No, there's a whole lot more to it.
I think in their narrative, they're of the Native in general, their narrative is the warrior Native. And I think they think that Natives are supposed to be proud of that. And at the same time, they co-opt, like everything you just said right now about sports, as you're talking about the logos and the animals. It's been on my mind a lot recently, especially, I'm glad that people are saying Black Lives Matter and supporting, obviously, I mean, that you shouldn't even have to say that. And I'm really glad that people are standing in solidarity. I just wish in the sports industry that they would stop with the mascots, the Native mascots.
Well, good luck with that, you know.
Maybe if they recognize that this was actually, you know, acknowledged that this came from Native peoples created the way that people enjoy athletics now. I don't know. I'm hoping this is a moment in history where we can find other places to be in solidarity with each other.
Because I hope so too, Kayla. I hope so too. I mean, there's a lot of solidarity between. I have a lot of people who are involved with Idle No More in Canada, who showed up at, you know, the telescope protests. Mm-hmm. People who visit Hawaii as educators, or, you know, in some capacity, who feel a solidarity with other marginalized people in the world who've been taken over by colonialism. And you know, I agree with your take on Black Lives Matter. Black lives have always mattered. I was there in the 60s, and I was friends with people like Muhammad Ali and Stokely Carmichael and Dick Gregory and other activists, but I was never part of what was called the civil rights movement, although there were a lot of white acts who would show up for the photo ops of the civil rights movement and who, you know, gave some dollars. But nobody ever showed up in Indian country. Black mm-hmm. people did. Black mm-hmm. people did. Dick Gregory came to my reserve, and, you know, he joined right in with the activism that we had going on in Saskatchewan. And he was appalled on the airplane on the way back. Dick Gregory, the comedian, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
He was crying in the airplane. You know, he thought that he had seen marginalization and poverty and racism, but it had never occurred to him, as smart and wonderful and multifaceted as he was at the time, it had never occurred to him what happens to Native American people. And I would just like to say something right now, because I've been involved with a lot of foundations. I mean, I'm Buffy St. Marie. I've been doing this for over 50 years. I've sat in philanthropy meetings alongside the Rockefellers and the Fords and the wealthiest people in the world. And I've even gone to meetings of Black philanthropists as well. And there's more to it than just race. Money is a big, big deal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, whatever their background, whether they're Native or Black or white or whoever, wherever, whatever they are, they have grown up in a pecking order where the guy who gets to grab the most gets to be the king. Who's that sound like? Oh, you know, the whole pecking order mentality of Europe is what I object to. Mm-hmm. That entire pecking order. And that's really what colonialism doesn't want to give up. I mean, it's so much more than race. I mean, I see the pecking order mentality on reserves. I see it in the Indian community. I see it in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody just wants to be one step high, mucky, muckier than the next guy. It's so stupid. There is no pecking order except in, it's kind of a social mental illness, I think.
Well, it's capitalism, and right? I mean, it colonization. Is.
And I'm sad to say that I have walked in as a Native person. I wasn't dressed in feathers and fringe. I just in a business suit like everybody else. I've walked into philanthropy meetings where I felt a little uncomfortable, but also Black ones. So it's not just white people who suffer from the pecking order. The pecking order thing that leaks into racism, because I don't think that anybody in a Black meeting has anything against Natives. But when I walk in, I feel othered, and it's not just me. No, you know, this is something that I think the world doesn't know about. Many, you know, I'm in a privileged position for many years. You know, because I got rich and famous real young. There really weren't very many doors closed to me. But when I got in the door, I sure learned what it was like to be, I can't say mistreated, because these nice people, whether they're white or Black, whatever they are, they were on their best behavior, but they were children, you know, they were sponges of the pecking order who had soaked up the idea of, you know, is this person higher than me or lower than me? Is this competition or is this collaboration? You know, it's business. And North America and the world in general, you know, for the moment, business majors run the world. And I don't know what we're going to do about that, except look after each other, because chances are the business majors are not going to be looking after you. They're busy competing with each other.
So many business suits. Never knew a dollar sign could look so high.
the subject of so much of your work has been about this issue of greed, colonization, money, carving up Mother Nature. And so you've actually been addressing this for a long time.
Yes, I have. And so have a lot of other Indigenous people. Our resistance is not new. It never has stopped. It's only like every 30 years that somebody gets their name in the paper, because there's big business competition for that newspaper space too. So, you know, it's a lot of, I think a lot of my Indigenous friends at one time or other in their lives have been shocked to come to the realization that, you know what? We are like around, I'm not sure what the census figures are, because they're going to be new pretty soon, but if I'm not mistaken, last time I checked was a few years ago, it's like roughly 20% of the population was identified as African American. And, you know, there are statistics, but we hover around 1% of the population.
Right. 1 or 2%.
So none of these, none of these people in foundations, you know, wealthy foundations, none of them have ever been around us. They may be Black, they may be Latino, they might be Asian, they might be white. They haven't been around us. And we're the tiniest minority. And we've been misportrayed in entertainment and in literature and in politics. That's why even when I was a young singer in the 60s in Greenwich Village, you know, I was in my early 20s, but I was trained as a teacher. And I wasn't here to rub people's noses in, you know, how the white man screwed the Indian. That's not what I was doing. But I felt sorry for average people because they'd never had a chance to learn about us in the right way. They'd never learned about the Good Red Road. They never learned about our heroes, about our achievements, our accomplishments, our advancements, our contributions. So that's a big plus for me that I like to share with other Indigenous people or other marginalized people, or if you're a girl and you're going to walk into a locker room full of boys, you know, remember who you are and don't hold it against people that they don't know who you are.
Your first album, It's My Way, I mean, you came out with this anthem that is so relevant now, especially for Natives, especially for women.
I'm cutting my own way through my own day, and all I dare say is it's my own. I got my own seeds, got my own weeds, I got my own harvest that I've sown. I can tell you things I've done, and I could sing you songs I've sung, but there's one thing I can't give, for I and I alone can live. The years I've known and the life I've grown, got a way I'm going, and it's my way. I've got my own stake in my own game, I got my own name, and it's my way. I got my own kith, I got my own kin, I got my own sin, and it's my way. I got my own peace, I got my own wrath, I got my own path that only I can go. I got my own sword in my own, I got my own plan that only I can know. Don't be sad.
life I've grown, but away I'm going, and it's my way. Don't be sighing, don't be crying. Your day will come, your day alone. Put down the story of what I've known. You're bound for glory, all of your own. Put down the story of what I say. You're bound for glory, all of your own one.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the title of that song gets confused with the old Frank Sinatra thing about, damn it, I did it my way, right?
But you predated so that. Your song yeah. came first.
Yeah. But my song is not about it's my way. My song is about it's my way, with the emphasis mm-hmm. on way. And what that means is it's my path, my my dharma. You know, it's my yoke. You know, like an ox has a yoke. This is what I'm taking on myself. This is my path. This is my, not so much my destiny or my fate, but this is the path that I can see. You know, and as a little girl, I grew up in the woods, and I just knew paths that, you know, just me and the animals knew. Oh. And so the idea of cutting your own way, being the first. Just because you just want to know what's ahead, if you do make that road, not take it, but make it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, I guess it's, I don't know. It's just a very positive streak in me.
Your message is consistent, and it has been throughout your career. Consistent and full. It's as if you sprang forth fully developed. But is that true? How can that be? I ask myself. At what point in your life did you come to understand yourself to be this artist? And you mentioned the word playing. So yeah. Is that what it is to you with music yeah. and with painting? It's about playing?
Yeah, it's it. You hit it. It's it. It's all there is. And I've always felt like I'm getting away with a whole lot because...
And I'm going up to see her about two times a week. Kiss her on the mouth, sweet as any wine. Wrap herself around me like a sweet tater vine. I'm going up Cripple Creek, going in a run. Going up Cripple Creek to have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in a whirl. Going up Cripple Creek to see my girl. Cripple Creek about half grown. Jump on a boy like a dog on a bone. Roll my britches up to my knees. Wait, old Cripple Creek, whenever I please. I'm going up Cripple Creek, going in a run. Going up Cripple Creek to have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in the world. Going up Cripple Creek to see my girl. Deep, I'll wait, oh, Cripple Creek, before I sleep. Hills are steep and the roads are muddy, and I'm so drunk that I can't stand study. I'm going up Cripple Creek, going in a run. Going up Cripple Creek to have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in a whirl. Going up Cripple Creek to see my girl.
I was ever a professional singer or songwriter. I was a teacher. I went to teacher college. My major in college was Oriental philosophy because I've always been so crazy about hearing people's reports of their own interactions with the creator. And for me, you know, I majored in Oriental philosophy, but I had grown up outside of churches. although I lived with a Catholic family for a while and I liked that. I never had people bullying me into churches and religion. Consequently, I've always been quite open. You know, I'm highly educated on the bad they've done, but I don't feel as though I'm prejudiced against organized religion. They're just business. It's what they are. Mm-hmm. And my attitude to business, I might have a terrible attitude to a business, but my feeling is that anything that people love, you know, it's going to be like honey, and you're going to attract thieves. Sports, oh, so many thieves in sports. Mm-hmm. Entertainment, the arts.
Exploitation. Sex. It's like part of it is exploitation, right?
Well, exactly. Anything that tastes good, exploiters are going to come along and they're going to say, oh, we're not exploiters. We're entrepreneurs. Entrepreneur is like the holy grail these days. Oh, yes, I want to be an entrepreneur. Well, let me tell you, entre means in between and preneur is a taker. So an mm-hmm. entrepreneur is somebody who, okay, you have something and I have something. An entrepreneur is the guy who gets between and takes from both of us, getting in between our relationship in order, he will say or she will say, to facilitate and make it better. And that may be the case, but it isn't always. So we have to remember that business is not what makes the world go round. It's people. But business at the moment, I think, is just totally out of control. And in my studies of Oriental philosophy, I learned that in India, for instance, people would consider anytime any one group is running things, you get trouble. For instance, if it's religion running things, you get the Inquisition. But there's always business behind it. If it's the warrior class who are running things, oh, you got trouble. But there's always business behind it. See, there's always this stupid business pecking order entrepreneur thing mm-hmm. with which people get away with all the skullduggery they do in their personal lives, in their business lives, in their national and tribal lives. And it's all hoo-ha, but we know that. And I've kind of known that from the time I was little. I didn't know what the world was about, but I know they told me that I couldn't be an Indian because there weren't any more. I was adopted. There may be some in Arizona, but no, you must be mistaken. And I was also told that I couldn't be a musician because I couldn't read music. No, people like me invented music, and then people like music teachers learned how to write it down so that exactly. non-musicians can play, right? Yeah, yes. So the first thing that comes to mind is play. No, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, that's what I did. I played. I was afraid of the other kids. I was the youngest one in my class. I was the smallest one in my class. I got bullied, and there were pedophiles in the house and in the neighborhood. It was a combat zone from the get-go, and I used to go to the piano just to have some fun and hide. But I couldn't, you know, in school, I was shunned I couldn't pass a music class, and I couldn't join band. I couldn't be in chorus.
God, I can't even believe this part.
No, well, of course, because I couldn't read music. I would get bad marks, and then because I got bad marks, they wouldn't let me play. And then I would go home and I'd play fake Tchaikovsky and fake Mozart on the piano, and nobody would know it. So mm-hmm. I've been the way I am for a very long time, mm-hmm. and I learned very early that this world is sometimes just plain either blind or stupid, at least so far as I'm concerned. They say that I cannot be indigenous because they don't know any Indians. And they say that I can't be a musician because I can't read European notations. So I learned very early that sometimes the world is just full of it. Sometimes they're just plain mistaken where you're concerned or where your community is concerned or where your talents and style are concerned. So I guess I learned how to embrace the passion of solitude and what you can do in solitude to keep yourself amused. I think that's why I like learning so much and why I'm a bibliaholic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I read Andrea Warner's amazing book, by the way. That was a great piece, her biography about you.
Oh, and Andrea Warner, what a great writer, huh?
Oh, she did such a great job. I hope more people buy it.
Yeah, she wrote my autobiography, and it was the second, she wrote my biography, excuse me.
Right. But it was the second one done about you.
It was, yeah. Blair Stonechild knows my family, and he's the head of Native Studies at First Nations University in Regina. And several years ago, he wrote a book about me called It's My Way. But Blair is not a music writer at all. He's a historian. So the two books are very, very different. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them could have been written by the other writer. So Andrea's book is about show business, music, feminism, activism. But Blair's book is about history. He knew my family. He knows Cree traditions. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at it from it's very, very interesting combination. But yeah, Andrea's book is really fun to read, isn't it?
Well, it's really great. I mean, you really get into, I, as a reader, got into just the narrative of your, I'm going to say process, for lack of a better word. But I love when you talked about soaking, like, Edith Piaf, Carmen, mm-hmm. Anaya, Lottie, mm-hmm. Kimbrough, you soaked them up like a sponge, you said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah.
Was that when, like, at what point was that always your way of learning and creating?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Was there a moment where it was like, this is it?
No. No, that's just how I am from the beginning. Mm-hmm. No, when I was about three, my family got a piano and I met my favorite toy. we're still married. And I taught myself how to play, and it was the most fun I had ever had, and probably still is. And so I was a pencil and paper and crayons and kind of kid, and I used to listen to Swan Lake on a record player, and then I'd sit down and I'd try to play it, and I could. And I'd play it and play it until I could play it even better. And so I learned totally by ear. And if you're lucky enough to have seen the Elton John movie Rocket Man,
yes.
Oh, I just love the part where Elton just hears something on the radio and starts playing it, because that is how it is for real musicians.
Oh.
And I am so sick and tired of music teachers, just because they make money. Music teachers really kind of own the musical life of most schools in the world, because you can make money with it. But natural musicians, nobody you've ever heard of. I mean, people like me and, well, Elvis Presley couldn't read, Wes Montgomery and Chet Atkins couldn't read, Michael Jackson couldn't read, Eric Clapton couldn't read. I mean, there are most of them, Jimi Hendrix couldn't read, most of us can't read. So I'll tell you a metaphor right now, because it has to do with Sesame Street and breastfeeding. When mm-hmm. I woke up in the hospital, from my baby being born, I looked over at the tables and there were two big baskets. I think one was from Nestle and one from, I don't know, Enfamil or somebody, from formula companies. Big, fancy baskets with, saran wrap and ribbon mm-hmm. from the formula companies. And my doctor didn't know anything about breastfeeding. And so where I'm tying this to natural music is that breastfeeding is natural and nobody makes any money off it. Therefore, it's not a business. Therefore, mm-hmm. you don't learn about it, because it's not making anybody any coins. It's not advancing anybody in the freaking pecking order. I mean, that's kind of my take on business and the music business. I'm not down on people who learn by reading. I think that's terrific, because I think there's 360 degrees of ways to be a musician.
Mm-hmm.
But natural musicians have been trodden upon, have been stamped out. You don't even hear about it in school. So I'm kind of hoping, like, my big dream would be to have, the Grammys will never do it, but the Junos in Canada may do it. I'd like to see a 2-minute video just with the names and photos of natural musicians who can't read music, just to celebrate them, to mm-hmm. celebrate them, because it's a lot of people's favorite artists. And one time I was talking to my friend Chet Atkins. He was a real good friend of mine. And I said, I can't read music. He said, what I told somebody when they asked me if I could read music? I said, not enough to hurt my playing. So here we go again. It's about play. So even the study of indigenous everything, notice I don't say history.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The study of indigenous everything, for me, it's play. You don't have to twist my arm. You have to hold me back,
Well, what are you working on now?
I'm working on the Creative Native Project in Canada. And I'm also providing a lot of indigenous science curriculum, indigenous geography and government curriculum through various wide-reaching educational projects like the Legacy Schools for the Downey Wenjack Foundation. So I'm doing a lot of educational things.
I know you've just done the pet adoption project. That's actually pretty new. And there's a book that goes with that, right?
It's a children's book. It's a picture book, an illustrated kids book, and it has the song in sheet music at the end and has a lot of pictures of my pets. And no, it's called Hey Little Rockabye. It says, hey, little rockabye. Hey, little darling. Hey, little rockabye. You got somebody loves you. Were you born on a cold winter day? Are you a poor little orphan? Did somebody throw you away? Well, now you get somebody loves you.
Fur coat, and now you got somebody loves you. Now you got somebody loves you.
What I'm saying is that just like we started in the very beginning of this conversation, marginalization, poor health, police brutality, this is not new for Indigenous people. Trying to protest and being confronted by, you know, just the military attitude, even in our neighbors, this is not new. This is not new for us. And for me, it puts me in a funny position when I'm watching the news. You know, so often, I mean, I don't want to be snarky and smarmy too much. Sometimes I'm just saying, well, yeah, this has been going on for ages in our neighborhood, and you guys are just finding out. But I think it's always like that. And I think that as Indigenous people, we always have to remember what a tiny minority we are. We are amazing, but there aren't many of us. So really, I think it pays to, you know, learn your stuff, know what you're talking about, and learn how to enjoy it.
Once the virus and everything kind of settles, hopefully that'll be soon, you'll be back on tour?
Oh, gosh, yeah. We had to cancel, I don't know how many concerts. I mean, show business just fell to its knees, you know. There's nobody doing anything.
Well, Buffy St. Marie, it's been my honor and privilege to have you on the show. And I can only say continued health, love, and success, because you're such an inspiration to millions and millions of us. I'm just one, but you are truly an inspiration. Mahalo nui for this time with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. And please give my regards to Teokasin and carry it on.
You've been listening to First Voices Radio. I'm Anna Kayla Kelly, sitting in for Teokasin Ghost Horse, who will be back live in the studio next week. At the top of the show, we heard Indigo Girls singing Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Then we had Janis Joplin singing Kodaim. Eva Cassidy singing Tall Trees in Georgia. Up Where We Belong, which was co-written with Jack Nietzsche and Will Jennings and made famous by Jennifer Warrens and Joe Cocker in the soundtrack to An Officer and a Gentleman. And we had Elvis Presley, Willie Nelson, Neil Diamond, and Johnny Mathis singing Until It's Time for You to Go. Then we had Donovan, and then Buffy St. Marie singing Universal Soldier. After that, we heard Now That the Buffalo's Gone, No No Keshegesh, It's My Way, Cripple Creek, and Hey Little Rockabye. Mahalo nui loa for allowing me to share this sacred time with you. Please stay safe and healthy and be what Hawaiians call maka'ala. Keep your eyes open. Don't miss the signs and choices and chances the universe is putting right in front of you. We close now with Buffy St. Marie singing Carry It On.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy domingo 23 de abril del 2023. Millones de estadounidenses se reunieron sin máscara en hogares y lugares de culto este mes para la Pascua y el Ramadán, la última evidencia de que el coronavirus se ha retirado de la vista del público a medida que la pandemia termina, pero el retiro no es lo mismo que la erradicación. Los funcionarios federales de salud dicen que el COVID sigue siendo una de las principales causas de muerte en los Estados Unidos, vinculado a unas 250 muertes diarias en promedio, principalmente entre los ancianos